Hello, world, and welcome to Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is your host, Jessica, and joining me is my co-host, Professor Ken. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jessica. It's the middle of September. Farmers are harvesting their corn, all the abundance and the potential that's been growing out in the field, gathering the soil and the sun to make food for us is ready for us to put in our mouths.
Which is good. Yeah.
It's an awesome time for us to talk about the year ahead in agriculture.
Okay, so what are we talking about exactly today, Ken?
We're talking about the outlook for farmers' incomes and for food prices for the coming year, Jessica.
All right, and joining us is Professor Hurt, who's a faculty member at the Agricultural Economics Department at Purdue University. And Chris, how you doing?
Hey, how about Professor Hurt? How about Professor Chris? Come on, let's not be so formal here.
Dr. Professor Chris.
Just Chris. That sounds good.
All right. So, Chris, can you give us an overview of how things are looking this year?
Well, as Ken got us started, we were kind of at the bottom on crop production in 2012 with a very terrible drought through the Midwest, and many people still remember that summer. I guess maybe this one comes close to being the exact opposite of that. Beautiful summer, cool summer, plenty of moisture for the most part, and overall, Mother Nature has really given us a blessing. We're going to have very, very good crop yields, it looks like, on our fall crops, corn and soybeans, and those are the big crops in the Midwest and certainly for Indiana.
Sounds like good news for farmers, Chris.
Well, it sure is. And again, if you think those farmers are producers, then they're really producing this year. But there's another part that we around here get involved with, and that's their economics. So what we have is the dismal economist comes along and says, hey, you got a lot to sell this year. That's really great. The bad news is prices are really looking bad. And in fact, the prices are so low, revenue is probably going to be down pretty sharply here with this 2014 crop.
Why are prices so low?
Prices are low because it seems like food is one of those things. If you have a shortage of it, as we did in 2012, people will pay very, very high prices for it. On the other hand, when you move towards surpluses that we are moving towards now, it seems like people aren't concerned about supply, and really we have trouble getting reasonable prices. So it is kind of the nature of our food system. We have too much of it, prices are extremely low, and that generally means low revenues and low incomes.
Chris, I have to ask though, how is it possible to have too much food?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, it is one of the things that we see in terms of almost all kinds of goods, but food is one of those that in particular is that way. Food tends to be one that some of our products are not storable, so that certainly, if you have too much and it's forced into the market, that can be a problem. Our grains are storable, so that does keep us from having extremely horribly low prices. But I guess maybe we can turn this if we're looking for some good news, and that is these big crops are really going to help moderate food price increases here over this next year, and that's good news for consumers. And let's remember, those consumers are around the world. And the most vulnerable consumers are the ones that are very low incomes in developing countries, and abundance of food is clearly a good thing overall.
So, Chris, is this bad news for all farmers from an economic perspective? I mean, we don't eat all of those corn and soybeans that are growing out there, do we?
Well, really, we're seeing a tale of two different kind of farm operations. And one is the very low prices we're seeing on grains are really going to cause farm incomes to drop pretty sharply for the grain-producing sector of agriculture. But there's the other side of that, and here comes that on the other hand, low grain prices are the feed input that go into the animal sector. And so the animal sector is actually going to have record profitability here in 2014, and that's going to be very strong into 2015. So here again, our U.S. consumers will get benefits in the longer run, benefits in the sense of the whole animal product complex. We're going to see some moderation in those prices, and boy, are they high at the retail sector this year. Record beef prices, record pork prices, record milk prices, record dairy product prices at the retail counter. So that's good news. We'll see some moderation in those prices, moving on down into 2015.
So, Chris, does that mean that in 2015 my hamburger is going to be a little cheaper?
Well, we'll be careful there at saying it'll be cheaper, but the first thing we have to do is to slow down the rate of increase. Pork and beef, we're seeing about 12% higher this year versus last year. Those are really high increases for families, especially our more moderate income families. So the first thing we're going to have to do is slow that down. We're going to do that on the pork and the poultry early in 2015. We think by spring or maybe into the summer, we'll really slow down those rates of increase and bring those down some. So on the other hand, beef, Ken, is going to be one that it's just going to take longer. We're really out to probably 2017 before we can get enough beef supply to bring down those prices.
Ooh, that's a long time.
So you're a hamburger, Jessica. Chicken nuggets, Jessica.
Chicken nuggets, it is for 2015.
But, you know, here's the thing, Chris. I think what you're saying is that the price of meat products for consumers will be cheaper than they would have been if we hadn't had this big grain crop. Isn't that the case?
Well, no, that's correct. And again, how quickly those come down, obviously consumers want them to come right away. Jessica wants that hamburger price to come down, and we don't blame her. But that does take some time. There are time lags in these issues. And, of course, for livestock, you first have to expand the herds and flocks and then have a grow-out period, and so that does take some time. But this is clearly high production is good news on food around the world.
Where did we get these high meat prices from, Chris? What caused that?
Well, obviously, record high meat prices that we're going through here in 2014, and those prices have come from what we saw earlier, very high grain prices. So if we go back the last 5 to 7 years, really high grain prices, and it's been the era of the grain farmer. Very high returns there. And so this caused a lot of losses for the livestock industry, and they had to cut back production. They cut back production, and that eventually got those retail prices that Jessica's talking about here so high. And again, we as consumers don't like that. So now we're flipping and going from a very strong grain price era to more lower price, more moderate grain and feed prices. And we're going to rebuild the animal sector, we think, over the next 3 to 5 years. Not just 1 year, but multiple years. And that's going to allow consumers get more supply. So that hamburger, the opportunity to buy beef and buy other meats is going to be much more affordable for our consumers in the United States.
So, Chris, I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but we've heard a lot about feeding 9 billion people sometime in the future. Are we done worrying about that?
No, I think that will continue to be a very important aspect, and it's 9 billion people with strong incomes, of course. The income growth is very important. I think probably what we have seen over the last 5 to 7 years is we've seen maybe, certainly the talk about the demand side of our food business is very important, but we economists say if you really want to identify the direction, you have to look both at the demand and the supply. And those very high prices on these grains around the world has really stimulated supply. So supply has actually been growing more than the demand's been growing for the last 3 or 4 years. And that means you're building inventory. And that's where, again, Jessica, we get back in these world markets of saying that we have enough. There's not a shortage, and prices are going to be lower and certainly much more moderate.
Okay, so you say surplus, and that makes me think that there's just grain lying around being unused and left to rot. Is that the case?
Well, not really. Of course, we do have spoilage and loss in parts of all over the world, and certainly developing countries have more of that problem. But it's a really a surprising relationship. Generally, if you think about the supply being maybe 45 to 50 days of supply at the end of a year when we're ready to harvest another crop, those are considered very adequate stocks. If you drop down below 30 days, get down to 20 days, that is a great concern. Now, this is renewability is what we're really talking about. Renewability, every year you produce another crop. And so this confidence that we'll be able to produce a crop and only have that carryover now, say 45 days to 50 days, that begins to become burdensome. It's expensive to carry that inventory from year to year. You have a 50-day supply and now harvesting another crop and you're going to build that inventory again. So that's kind of the way this world works. And I think those of us in agriculture try to express to people that's a very thin margin. When you're talking about something that's absolutely necessary for our lives to continue, food consumption.
You would be talking about eating.
Eating.
Which
eating.
Is one of my favorite pastimes.
I think it's one of everyone's favorite pastimes, Jessica. But Chris, I think it's important for us to point out that even with low grain prices, there are still people around the world who aren't going to be able to afford to eat the way we eat. Isn't that the case?
Well, of course, we continue to have concerns about, even in the United States, undernourishment and inability of some families to secure a sufficient amount of food. So we know that's a very important part of agriculture, and many of those are distributional problems. But yes, that is the case. We clearly have people around the world that are existing on $1 to $2 of income per day. And we literally have billions of people, it's not just a few people that have very moderate incomes. But it does help overall, and we're seeing some of the international food agencies also reflect that this buildup in inventory we've had of basic grains is really helping to moderate and lower some of those world food prices. Some of it's an income issue, some of it's distributional, some of it is political instability in countries. But lower prices does help make food available to a broader range of people.
So forgive me for putting this so crassly, but we could say essentially that this is good news for low-income families and bad news for grain farmer profit?
Well, that's right. And again, from a grain farmer standpoint, we are going to see incomes, we think, down about 30% this year.
Ooh, that's considerable.
Yeah, that they could be another additional 30% or so next year.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, the good news is they're coming off of record highs, so it's not quite as dire. But I think this is a really major reshuffling, a major strategic change in the way crop farmers have to think. We think it's really one of adjustment, trying to drive costs lower, trying to reduce expenditures in any way they can, looking for more efficiency in terms of input use. And that's going to have big implications over on a whole range of other industries that work with agriculture. The input supply sector going into the crop sector is going to be under a similar kind of pressure. We look over the livestock, the animal sector, and that's kind of going to be a boom sector, we think, a little bit of a mini boom the next several years. So it really makes a difference where in agriculture you are. Crop agriculture, it's kind of on the downside adjustment. Livestock in an expansion period in the next 3 to 5 years.
So Chris, if I was a crop farmer, what should I be doing to protect myself against this downturn in income?
Well, obviously, lots of strategy changes. I think one of the things we see when we're in the boom period to the upside, you want to be aggressive. You want to be buying inputs early because inputs are tending to go up in price also, so you want to lock those in early. You also want to, when things are going up, you want to delay pricing your output because prices are getting higher and higher, you delay. And you want to be aggressive. You want to be expansion-oriented. Now we've reversed that. Now on inputs, there's some tendency for inputs to come down in price, we think, over time. That means you'd want to delay buying inputs. The prices of the grain are going down overall, or at least in a weak period. You'd want to be pricing your output earlier. Be aggressive, not at this point. Don't rush out and try to pay the highest cash rent value to get more acres of land. So negotiate with on cash rents. We're certainly talking to cash rent tenants about trying to do that. We're trying to tell landlords, expect your tenant to be asking for lower cash rents. we're talking about negotiating on all these inputs. And again, the input sector hasn't yet started to make those adjustments, but we think they will be forced through competition. Somebody will be a cost leader and try to lower their prices on some of these inputs, and that provides an opportunity. And then there's a whole list of things on financial management that people can get involved with. Work with their lender. If you get into some tight cash flow periods, get into your lender early and talk to them. Lenders have been through downturns in agriculture. They'll help you get through this. So a lot they can think about, but one of them is just philosophical, that instead of being so aggressive, now I'm looking for more of a downside, and I want to make sure my financial position's in good shape before I make major new expenses.
So what I hear you saying, Jessica, is buy low, sell high.
Got it. All right. I was hearing all these words and like inputs and cash rents and like what?
And the other message I heard in there is might not be a bad idea to have your lender over for a barbecue sometime this fall.
Absolutely.
Very true.
And the lenders obviously have been watching this situation very closely They're experienced. Work with them. Work with those lenders. It's very important. And I think the bottom line is one of the things that's been talked a great deal about is the 1970s and 1980s boom bust. And what we're saying about this cycle is this was a boom cycle, and then we're going to get a moderation. We don't believe it's going to be a bust period. The moderation will involve some adjustments, but we think the vast majority of Midwest farm families are going to be able to make that adjustment, but they will have to adjust.
And you know, that sounds like a subject for a whole new podcast. So.
Absolutely. Let's think about getting somebody in here to talk about booms and busts and farmland values. And you know why? Because AgEcon student numbers at Purdue track almost identically with farmland values. And I'm a little bit worried about a boom and bust cycle here myself.
Huh. All the implications.
It's all out there. Yeah. And we're here to tell you about it.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us and taking the time.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
All right. And we hope you all tune in next time.